This podcast is made possible by the generosity of supporting members. Please visit dharmaocean.org to learn more about becoming a supporting member. You are listening to the Dharma Ocean podcast. In this talk, Reggie looks at how the Mahayana training of the Bodhisattva transitions to the Vajrayana stage of the journey. He says that inborn wisdom naturally emerges in our state of being when we engage in helping others. At a certain point, this wisdom compels us to let go further and meet the sacredness of all reality. This talk was given at the 2005 Winter Datun Retreat, held in Crestone, Colorado.
You know, at a certain point, you begin to realize that everything in your life is your friend. Everything in your life is your ally. Not the ally of ego, but the ally of your journey. And you really start to see it. The more you practice, the more you start to see that there isn't anything in your life that occurs that isn't furthering your own journey, waking you up and bringing you more in touch with who you are. And the more we go along the path, the more we feel completely at home in our life. It's as if we have come to a magical banquet and we sit down at the table and initially we can't see what's on the table. And the thing about the magical banquet is the magical banquet always has exactly what we need in the sense of nourishing us and being tasty and waking us up and bringing us to light. Initially, we're starving, and we don't see the banquet. We don't even see it. And then all of a sudden, somebody says, you know, we're so depressed, we're kind of sitting there like this. In the meantime, this whole banquet is right in front of us. And somebody says, why don't you lift your head up? That's the practice of meditation. Lift up your head and look. And then you begin to realize you are sitting in front of this table, this unbelievable feast, which is so transformative and so nourishing. You never in all of your lives ever imagined that life could be like this. And yet here it is, and it's happening. At a certain point in the beginning, you don't quite believe it. But after a while, you do believe it because this is it. It's happening. This is your life. And then you look around and you realize there are all these starving people who are sitting, they're near the table, but they don't see it either. And they actually are starving. And your heart breaks for them because you realize how close they are and yet they can't. Without someone helping them, it's never going to happen. In the same way that we were helped by the teachings and the teacher and the lineage, we can help them, and we do understand that. At a certain point, and this is, again, just our own unfolding. It's just our process. This is not something external. It's not something that's coming from the outside in any way. It's simply the natural process of the human person. We come to a certain point, and our heart begins to wake up. We begin to notice the other suffering beings, and at a certain point, all we want to do is help them. We actually have no other desire. When Rinpoche was teaching in 1973, he gave a wonderful seminar called The Complete Teachings of the Mahayana. And in that teaching, he said that helping beings, at a certain point, you know, when this comes to be part of your own unfolding as a human person, that helping beings becomes as necessary as breathing or as drinking water when you're thirsty. It's that natural. So the inspiration for entering the Mahayana is simply that we've woken up to the point where we begin to notice others and we begin to hear their piteous cries and we begin to see the suffering on their faces. We walk into King Supers, and in the old days, We would be so tied up with our own personal problems that we didn't actually notice other people. But now we walk into King Supers, and every person we see, we can see them. And we see the stress on their faces, we see the suffering in their faces, we see their torment, we see how they're so shut down, they're just shuffling along the aisles because life is so painful. And once we begin to have that kind of sensitivity to other people, we have no choice but to want to dedicate our life to helping them. So I wanted to come back again and talk about the paramitas briefly as the main ground of the Vajrayana, the Mahayana, but as a transition to the Vajrayana. And I'll go through this quickly because we talked about it the other day. I want to talk about the 10 paramitas because there are four more that you probably haven't heard about. And these are fruitional paramitas that lead into the Vajrayana. So I want to go through these with you just briefly. And the basic point here is that, continuing what I was just talking about, is that the whole Mahayana journey, again, is a natural unfolding of our own inner inspiration and our own need, actually, and so much part of becoming who we are. It's very strange. When we start the Buddhist path, we actually think that the practice of our meditation and so on, that actually it's about us primarily, and what we do find out is so much about our own person and our own karma and the scope of our own inspiration and our own where we get hung up and so on. But at a certain point in our journey, we start to find that actually the process of becoming who we are all of a sudden starts to involve other people. And we begin to realize that we actually cannot go further in who we are, in finding out who we are, until we surrender the focus on ourselves, which is very ironic. And this is another thing Rinpoche talked about in that same seminar. He said, you can't go further as long as you're trying to go further. As long as you are trying to go further, you run up against a wall. But the way to go beyond the wall is you start to let go of any sense of territory of your own personal achievement and your own sort of narcissistic focusing on yourself. Because up until this need to include others, there's no narcissism at all. It's all opening. But then at a certain point, it starts to get just a teeny weeny bit old. And we feel like, you know what? I have to open. I have to let go. And that inspiration is actually the birth process of how we do go further in becoming who we are. So the paramitas are quite an amazing series of, I wouldn't even call them practices, I would call them stages of unfolding. So if you will bear with me, I'm just going to talk about them briefly. And I want to tell you about these other four because they're pretty interesting. So this is the Mahayana journey that we can anticipate. And again, the tradition is saying, you know, you have to really rely on yourself, but at the same time, we're giving you some kind of language so that as you move along, you can identify what's happening. Number one is generosity, which is what I was just talking about, which is the longing, really, longing to open. You know, before we get to this point, we don't want to open particularly. We'll open to ourselves. We don't really want to open to other people, not really. But at a certain point, you do want to open to other people unconditionally, and it just becomes such a strong need to do. Open our hearts, hold the other in our heart, welcome the being of the other. We start to begin to see in other people their beauty, their creativity, their uniqueness, and truly you do fall in love. You fall in love with the other because you begin to see them. You see who they are, and you see two things. Number one is you see what they are, and some people see it visually. Sometimes, actually, there's a very depressed person, and all of a sudden this beautiful, radiant, confident thing just flashes out of them. You know, that's what's hidden there. So the other thing you see is how they don't know. And you long to open and include. You long to open and include them in your life and let go of any barriers that you have with them. Discipline is that the longing to open is just not a one-shot deal, but it's something that you long to remain in that space. It doesn't feel right to you to just open and then shut down. So discipline is continuing, you know, in that process of opening and making that actually the ground of your life. Patience is that the more we open, the more our own obstacles arise in the form of judgments and irritation and, you know, all kinds of getting our back up about the way people are. I mean, it's fine, you know, to open further, open completely, but then all of a sudden we begin to realize that we're seeing things we don't like. And we hit that wall. And patience is the ability to see where we're holding back, where judging other people and becoming irritated and impatient with them is actually our holding back and not trusting their process. And we have that ground because we know ourselves that the process itself is exactly what needs to be trusted, no matter what it is. However it comes out, you have to trust the unfolding that's occurring in that moment. We know that from our own Hinayana practice. So we extend that, and the patience is that you abide with the other and you keep abiding, and you let go of the tendency to shut down or run away. And then exertion is a very interesting one. Exertion is that when we really begin to feel the being of other people and when we see how they're stuck, we kind of get freaked out as bodhisattvas. I mean, did you know that about bodhisattvas? They actually get freaked out. And they get freaked out because they want to be more helpful. I've got to help this person now. And exertion is that we do not degenerate into being busy. Exertion means avoiding the temptation to do anything. Are you getting this? And this comes from Dzogchen, where one of the most extreme forms of laziness, you know, laziness is a problem, and one of the most extreme forms of laziness is being busy. And it's a tremendous obstacle, actually, when we fill our life with activities, even if they're supposedly good Buddhist activities. From the Dzogchen viewpoint, this is bad news. It's laziness. And we need to apply the exertion so we remain in the space of non-doing. And even though we're told we have to save all sentient beings, if we think that means running around, we've missed the point. So exertion is remaining in that space of non-doing. Then, of course, the question arises, well, how in the heck do I help people? Well, the thing is, you've already helped people about as much as anyone could ever help anyone else through your generosity, your discipline, your patience, and your being willing to be in their space without jumping the gun or jumping them or, you know, allowing a kind of impulsive discomfort with their pain to lead us to do things prematurely. But it's a good question. How do I help beings? We meditate. That's the place. That's the fifth paramita, is meditation. What does that mean? It means that we begin to realize that only by contacting the non-dual space is there any hope that help can come. In other words, we completely give up relying on our own resources, which is what the first four paramitas have led us to. When we got to exertion, we gave up relying on our own ego in any way, our own agendas. And now we realize we need to open, we need to deepen, and we need to let go into the non-dual space of the unborn mind. And then the sixth paramita, prajna, means that out of that comes a tremendous sense of emptiness and groundlessness for us as bodhisattvas. Vast emptiness. Now again, you know, this is not some Buddhist thing. This is us. And it is the point that we come to in our own development in a very spontaneous and natural way. If it weren't that way, the Buddha never would have achieved enlightenment. I mean, that's why he is such a great example, because he didn't have any Buddhist path. He didn't have anything. All he had was his own person, and his thing was he trusted his own process so fully and so completely that everything that we're talking about came about in his own life. And then he achieved this fruition, which Rinpoche basically says was the fourth jhana. The achievement of the Buddha, if you look at it, is he went through all three jhanas, even though it wasn't called that way in the early tradition, and he achieved the fourth jhana. So this is what we're talking about, our own natural process. What this means is that we have the willingness and ability to abide in the non-space, or not the non-space, but in the space of non-ego. And we're not looking around for any kind of pinning things down. We're not looking for a feedback loop. And we actually just resist the temptation to concretize even the person we're helping as a suffering being, ourselves as helpers, or even the act of helping in any way. We just don't go there. We let our mind rest in emptiness. So that's the... Those are the conventional six paramitas, and now there are four more that I want to talk to you about. And these four are what happens when you're willing to make the kind of radical journey that I just talked about with these six paramitas, and you're willing to avoid imposing your trips on other people, you're willing to open fully, you're willing to stay without opening, you're willing to let go of your judgments and your agendas, you're willing to resist the temptation to jump into activity, you're willing to completely let go into the space of the unborn, and you're willing to abide in groundlessness through your life. Out of that comes these final four paramitas, and I'll just go through them very quickly. And these, by the way, are traditional, and they're in the texts. They're in some of the Prajnaparamita texts. It's just that they're not talked about that much. Number seven is skillful means. And what that means is when you take yourself out of the picture in such a complete and total way, all of a sudden things happen in your environment that are incredibly helpful for other people. Now, you can't exactly take credit for it, because somehow you've created a space in which their life can happen. And that's skillful means. Skillful means. It emerges in a natural and spontaneous way out of emptiness. And then number eight is called pranidhana, which means your vow, your bodhisattva vow. And this one is that when you take the vow, and, you know, I'm bringing this up because you're about to take the vow, so I thought I should just kind of give you a heads up. When you take the vow, over time, the vow becomes an incredibly important force, living force in your life. And it's like a river, and it's like you're in the river. And that vow brings about all kinds of inner dynamics and inner transformations, outer auspicious coincidences of all kinds, help that comes from who knows where. And that is actually a power. Again, it's not a power of ego, but it's a power that's actually invoked by the fact that you took the vow. The vow brings about, you see, when we talk about refuge, very important vow, but this actually is getting us into a different realm altogether, because now we're talking about other people, situations, outside things as well as inside things. And our whole life actually becomes a kind of dance in the... A dance, and all sentient beings are our partner. And the dance is beautiful, the dance is timely, the dance is auspicious, and the dance brings liberation to ourselves and others. Power of the vow, number eight. Number nine is bala, which means power, straight out power. And what it means is that the way we are in the world not only changes people. And again, we're not talking about ourselves. I hope you understand that. We're not talking about, I am a bodhisattva, I have this plan, how I am going to help other people. You need help, I'm going to help you, and this is what I'm going to do. We're not talking about that kind of thing. We're talking about, through our practice and our own unfolding, an environment is established where things happen. And it has, in one sense, I'll say it just straight out, it has nothing to do with our ego and our conscious intention. And it has everything to do with the groundlessness that we have confidence in. And the power is that what occurs in that environment not only changes ourselves, but it actually changes the world's karma. It changes ourselves, it changes the people that we're with, and it changes the karma of the world in all kinds of different ways. And the world, of course, we're not talking about that we can snap our fingers and all of a sudden problems are solved, but there's a kind of radiation that goes out from the the ninth paramita that touches, and it spreads out like dropping a pebble in a pool, a very still pool, and the ripples go way, way, way out. And number 10 is known as jnana, or wisdom, the last paramita in this list. And this is an unfolding process that is really fully perfected in the Vajrayana, but the vision is here. There are four stages in this process of wisdom that comes. The wisdom comes about because of the journey we're making, and again, it's an inborn process. What I'm about to mention is in us at this moment, and if we follow the path, the unfolding eventually comes to that point. The first one is simplicity, which means that we let go of all our judgments of the relative phenomena. One-pointedness, which means that having let go of all of our judgments, then the only reality is the reality of this moment. Therefore, we're completely one-pointed. Our mind isn't scattered because there's nothing else to be, there's nothing else going on. The third one is known as one taste, which is when you live in a way that is beyond judgment and evaluation. When you live completely present to phenomena, they all have the same taste, strangely enough, and that's the taste of emptiness. It's the taste of nowness. It's the taste of the intensity of life. And everything has that same taste. Of course, phenomena are infinitely variable, but they all have the same taste. And then the last one is called non-meditation, which is that we, at a certain point, our life has been so completely given over that even the need to meditate becomes a distraction. And our whole life becomes meditation. Our life never wanders from the nowness of existence, of the human situation. So this is the fabulous journey of the Bodhisattva. And having understood the 10 paramitas and seeing this process, one of the questions we might have is, how do I complete the journey? How do I make this journey? It's a very demanding journey. This is the journey. There is no journey beyond this journey. There's the Hinayana and the Mahayana, and that's it. But then we have the Vajrayana, which comes in at a certain point, and hopefully those of you who keep going will begin to experience that, where we're given various kinds of tools, techniques, practices, meditations, retreat practice, initiations, and so on, so that we can actually bring what I just talked about to fruition. The Vajrayana is really not a new view, but what it is you're kind of amping up the practice environment and the demand that we make on our own sanity. So then the Vajrayana becomes the next training ground, and then at a certain point, as we've talked about a lot, the way opens to let go. And the letting go is into the fourth jhana and into the sacredness of all reality. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is what you're signing up for. And the basic point is that it's all about helping other people. And this is the way we can do it. And this is the way we can change the world. We must allow ourselves to go through the radical unfolding that is within us. And we must do the practice and follow the jhanas that will midwife that unfolding. And if we allow ourselves, it's just a matter of letting ourselves do it. There's no effort involved. You understand that? We're talking about letting go of all the external superficial effort. If we allow ourselves to go through this process, we will be so helpful. We will help ourselves, we will help the people that we're close to, and we will help hundreds and eventually, through the impact of our life, millions of people. And it's all in us if we only give ourselves a chance.
To download more of Reggie's teachings, find out about upcoming retreats, and to explore a variety of audio listening guides to assist you on your spiritual journey, please visit dharmaocean.org. Music is by Jeff Beal and Nawang Kechog from the album Tibet, Cry of the Snow Lion.